Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
No one plans for hair loss. But through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Hail Mary. That's Hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. Hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 262. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have a great guest today, but first, let's bring on my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's going pretty good. Got a great group of players to talk about here, great guests, so it's going to be a good show. I'm really looking forward to it.
Is this our first time recording on a Saturday night? I can't remember.
One of the few times I can remember doing it, at least.
Got to record this on Saturday night. Usually we record Sunday night or Monday night, but I'm going to be flying to Germany this week, so I had to shift the schedule around a little bit, but good to get this episode in. And as I mentioned, we do have a great guest with us today. He is a writer and editor over at The Athletic, Mr. Michael Waterloo. Michael, how you doing, man?
Doing well, fellas. I appreciate you having me here. I feel like I'm with two 80 grade guys right now, and I'm excited to take part in the first Saturday recording.
Yeah, I think this is the first Saturday recording. And it's funny, obviously, you're a big, obviously, anyone goes to Michael's Twitter or X, whatever the heck we call it these days, at Michael Waterloo, you'll see a picture of Maine's own Anna Kendrick on there. So we share the love for Anna Kendrick, as she's maybe the biggest celebrity ever to come out of Maine, or at least in that discussion with Stephen King and Patrick Dempsey. But yeah, it's going to be a great episode, though. We're talking dynasty shortstops here. Obviously, this is maybe the most fun position to talk about every year in baseball, or it's right up there with outfield and pitcher, and a lot of fun players, a lot of polarizing players too, that people are very split on. And some people love these guys, other people not so much, like CJ Abrams is one we'll get into, and many others. Let's start off with our personal top 10 rankings, as we have with every show throughout this series. Michael, you want to lead us off with your top 10 dynasty shortstop rankings?
Yeah, I'd absolutely be happy to. If Anna Kendrick qualified for shortstop, I would definitely have her number one, but she didn't carry over eligibility, so that's a
darn.
So my top 10 for dynasty for shortstop, and like you said, it's such a great position, very polarizing, but a ton of fun every single year. Yeah, my top 10 are Bobby Witt Jr., Gunnar Henderson, Ellie De La Cruz, Corey Seager, Jackson Holliday, Trey Turner, Bo Bichette, Francisco Lindor, O'Neill Cruz, and Jordan Lawler.
Awesome. Chris, what's your top 10?
Oh, I think all three of us have Bobby Witt Jr. at the top, followed by Corey Seager, Trey Turner, Bo Bichette. So it looks like I'm probably going to be the high man on Trey and Bo here. And Francisco Lindor at the five spot. 6 through 10 is Gunnar Henderson, Ellie De La Cruz, Jackson Holliday, O'Neill Cruz, and CJ Abrams.
So I think we all have the same top 8, just in different orders. I think when I did my rankings, when I did my write up over on Patreon, I did it broken in the tiers. I had Witt alone in tier 1, and I think that's a pretty sizable tier 2. I think you could go 2 through 8 here and call that tier 2 before it drops off a little bit. But for me, obviously Bobby Witt Jr. in the 1, he's top 5 overall for me. And I have Ellie De La Cruz in the 2, Gunnar in the 3, Corey Seager 4, Trey Turner 5, and then Bo Bichette, Francisco Lindor, Jackson Holliday, Matt McLean, and Marcus Semien in the 10. But he still qualifies in some leagues. I still have him in mine. If he does not qualify, my next one down is CJ Abrams. So just for this, I'll move them up, take Semien out, because I think some leagues he's not eligible there. So let's call CJ Abrams in the 10 here for me. Let's start with Ellie, though. We talked a little bit about Ellie in our third base episode, but Michael wanted to get your thoughts on Ellie. Obviously, maybe the most polarizing player in fantasy right now. Obviously, the upside is absolutely massive. One of the few guys, like I mentioned last episode, I think there's 4 guys in baseball right now capable of going 40-40, and he is one of them. But obviously, a lot of red flags in the profile, too. So how are you looking at Ellie right now, and how are you valuing him moving forward?
Yeah, he's one of the higher variance plays that you can have in fantasy. We saw that last year whenever he broke onto the map. That's the perfect time that you should have looked to sold him, especially in a redraft, but even dynasty. Like I subscribe to the notion that the best time to trade a prospect is the day they get called up, and then right after they have their first big performance, because you could have just cashed in huge on Ellie De La Cruz. Then you saw the downside come, and it's just like, okay, maybe he's not ready. He can't stick long-term. He can't make enough contact. And then you have the whole people saying, oh, he has the attitude problem, because he's very cocky out there, deservingly. In the big conversation that we're seeing this year around Ellie De La Cruz for his NFBC ADP, is everyone was like, he's going way too high, which I agree he is. So you're going to start seeing the pendulum shift a little bit and see him going a little bit lower where he should. I think that's going to carry over to dynasty a little bit. People are going to hear that conversation of, oh, we're overdrafting Ellie. Maybe now's the time to cash out on him. And I would be looking to buy. I think we're going to continue to see those struggles. That can he make enough contact to stick? Like, what's he going to give you with the batting average? What's he going to give you with the strikeout rate? Can he keep at 30% or below? And that's the big question with him, because we love the ballpark for Ellie, right? We love that lineup. They have so many young studs there. We love the power. We love the speed. Like Eric said, one of the few true 40-40 guys there. And if you want to mind the news, shout out Jeff Zimmerman over at Fangraphs. He said he's trying to adjust staying off of pitches this offseason. Okay, great. Like we love to hear that, but can he actually do it now? So Ellie's a guy that I'm looking to buy, and I'm probably going to wait for a few weeks into the season to try to buy him more in case he struggles. Because I think we're going to continue to see the ups and downs this season and really see him put it together come 2025. Like, we forget just how young this guy is. He's only 21. He'll be 22 on opening day. So yeah, he's somebody I'm looking to buy aggressively, and I'm okay for that first cold stint of the season to really be aggressive with my offers.
Yeah, and I think it would be like I would have serious FOMO if I were to trade Ellie right now. Yeah, maybe he doesn't figure it out and he never lives up to the potential. That's obviously a potential outcome here, but man, what if he does? We're not talking about a guy that's like potential 25-25. Like, this is a potential 40-40 guy with his power, with his speed in that ballpark. Like we talked about last episode, he already ranked like, it was like fifth or sixth in home runs over 450 feet. And he was only out for what, two thirds of the season or something like that. So yeah, just showing, and then his first home run, I think, was over 450, if I recall correctly too. So what if factor is probably the biggest what if factor I can remember in recent memory. So unless I was able to get like super top dollar for him, which I don't think you're going to get right now in trade value. So yeah, I agree. Yeah. He's more of a hold and buy if people are thinking he's overrated or looking at all the red flags in the profile and thinking, oh, he can't adjust. Like you said, he's young. What's to say he can't make at least some adjustments? Yeah, maybe he's never going to hit 270, 280. That's probably a likely outcome. But if he can just hit like 250, would that ballpark give him that BABIP boost as well? That's absolutely possible, and that he could be a top 10 player with that power speed. So Chris, what are your thoughts here?
He's so interesting because, especially like for redraft purposes, everybody just, all the talk that I see seems like everybody's bashing him and completely out on him. But then you look and he's got a 22 ADP. His lowest pick has been 38 in 198 NFBC drafts, the highest pick being 10. And this is redraft we're talking about, which is crazy. So his value is all over the board, I'd say. I don't think a lot of people know what to do with him, but I think people do know that there's upside there. If you want to dog on him for what he did in his rookie year, you can. But again, so young, there was just so many adjustment periods for him coming to the game, and he's going to be a significantly better player than we saw in 2023 in the majors for so many reasons. The park is fitting, the power speed's just through the roof, which is very exciting, could lead to some incredible seasons. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him this year post a 25 home run, a 30 plus stolen base season, and there's still room to grow from there. We are talking about a 21-year-old, but the tools are off the charts. Just got to make consistent contact. I believe he'll do that. And I think what Michael said is actually a pretty good point. Wait a couple weeks into the season, see if he struggles a bit. And then if Ellie struggles, then there's a prime time buying opportunity. Just imagine the narrative if we're 3 weeks into the season and Ellie's hitting like 150 with, I don't know, a couple home runs and not stealing many bases. And everybody's like, okay, like he's toast. Just the narrative around it will be insane. It'll be an incredible buying opportunity, in my opinion.
The best and the worst thing to ever happen to fantasy are Ronald Acuna Jr., Juan Soto, Vlad Jr., Fernando Tatis, the way that they just came out and just performed right away. They set that new expectation for fantasy players for these prospects, and it's just like those, they are the exception. They're not the rule. We expect that. We have prospect fatigue so much, and we want the new shiny toy where, if Ellie struggles for a little bit, it's just like, okay, he's 22 years old. You want to give up on him? Wonderful. I will go ahead and trade for him. And it's not gonna be pennies on the dollar. It might be 80 cents on the dollar, 85 cents. More than happy to pay that just for that upside and realize that this takes time, guys. This takes time.
Absolutely. And I love it you just said that, because Chris and I have both said that same thing, that those guys are the exception to the rule, not the expectation. And that the shiny new toy, that literally my first article I ever wrote, which was a profile on Austin Meadows when he was a Pittsburgh Pirates top prospect. The very first sentence was, everyone loves the shiny new toy. First ever published article I wrote, that was the first sentence I had. So I love that you mentioned the shiny new toy as well. Because people, we don't give these guys time to, like, if they don't come out the gates, guns a-blazing, then, oh, they're not living up to the hype, or they're a bust. Like, people throw on that bust term way too quickly these days. Like, it's crazy how easily that gets thrown around. It's way too easy. But yeah, I give Ellie time. Let's just see what he can do. See if he can. He's been making adjustments throughout his minor league career. And again, still, he was on a 20-53 pace last year. I think people forget that. Even through the struggles and the ups and downs, still on a 20-53 pace, which is pretty damn good. Moving over to Mr. Bo Bichette, guy that I've loved for a long time now. Got to see him live in his AA days when he was a teammate in AA New Hampshire with Vlad, with Lourdes Gurriel, and with Kevin Biggio. That was an insane 2-5 in that lineup back then. That was just unfair. But Bo Bichette's a guy that I think whose value has ticked down a little bit this year. You see his ADP is down, like more so in the third round range after being a first, second rounder for the last few years. And yeah, he didn't go 29-25 like he did in 2021, but he did hit 306, 20 home runs, five steals, third in the majors in hits over the last 3 years, just behind Freddie Freeman and Trey Turner. But it was a slight down year for him. Where are you? Like, where are you at on Bo Bichette right now? Are you feeling a bounce back? Are you concerned by the declining steals? What are your thoughts on Bo right now, Michael?
Yeah, as you guys know, I am a big Blue Jays fan. If there's a little Canadian rose or colored tint on my glasses here, please excuse that. But yeah, like you, Eric, he's been a guy I've liked a long time. Whenever they were in Double A, they'd come to Reading and play. They'd come to Harrisburg and play. I got to go see them, got to interview him and Vladdy, like both fantastic. So it's been fun watching him. And I have a hard time believing that a 25-year-old is just starting his decline with his speed. His quality of contact was still really good. And it was bookend around his injuries last year. And I really do think that has a big part to play in the declining steals. The steals have declined the past 3 years, 25, 13, and then 5 last year. It's frustrating people who invested in him last year because you see steals up all around the league and people just stealing left and right. And you're only getting 5 from your first, second rounder. But he seems like he's just one of the better value picks in redraft, especially. I have him 29th overall, and I feel low with that. But you can get him in the third, fourth round in drafts. And as far as dynasty goes, again, he's a 25-year-old stud. I don't know if you're going to get 20 stolen bases again. That's fine. The projections are pretty much what I think. 25 homers, maybe a little bit room for more. 12, 15 steals. I definitely think it's in the ballpark. And you know that batting average is going to be there. And we can't really dismiss that. Toronto is really banking on last year being a blip. That's the quote we saw recently, that last season was a blip. And I hope it was for Bo Bichette. I hope it was for Vladdy Jr. And I'm all in on a bounce back. So I'm looking to acquire him where I can.
Yeah, it speaks volumes to how good a player's been when a year when he hit 306 to 20 home runs is a down year. Yeah, was it down for him? Sure. But still a very good year by most players' standards there. So yeah, I'm definitely with you there. Yeah, maybe he's never going to get back to that 25 steal range. I think that's maybe a fair assessment, but I don't think he's going to be like a 5 steal guy every year. Let's see what a fully healthy Bo looks like. And yeah, I'm thinking 25 plus home runs and maybe a dozen steals or so. And I think those counting stats should go back up as well. Obviously, he missed a little bit of time last year, was about 90 to 100 plate appearances, less than where he had been the previous years. So I'm sure this would be a nice little bounce back coming. So yeah, I'm absolutely buying the dip in value right now on Bo Bichette. How about you, Chris?
100%. And that's why I still have him pretty high in these rankings, just because of the value that he brings to the table. And obviously going to play up in like a standard 5x5 league versus an OBP format, because Bo is hyper aggressive and walks at a very low clip. But that's okay, because put so many balls in play, going to make things happen. I mean, he still hit 306 last year, which in itself is impressive. He's a 300 career hitter. I do think there's more power in the tank than we've seen. Bo has historically been a compiler per se, because he played 159 games in both 2021 and 2022. And so while the stats were down a little bit in 2023, played just 135 games, but still 600 plate appearances there. So a high plate appearance per game played, which is really encouraging. Now with Bo, you know what you're getting. I don't think that the stolen bases are completely gone. I don't need Bo to steal 20 bases to be valuable, because the average is such a boost to your team in a standard 5x5 format. There's 25 plus home run juice, and we've consistently seen that over the years. The quality of contact is really good. Bo's average EV of 90.2 miles an hour, 68th percentile among all hitters, had a 45% hard hit rate, which was 70th percentile, and an elite sweet spot rate too of 38.3%, which was 90th percentile among all MLB hitters. So there's still plenty of value to be had. I think that the biggest knock on Bo is that he doesn't steal bases, but with the average, the power, really the counting stats, if they tick back up, only scored 69 runs last year, which is pretty low considering the previous 2 years were 121 and 91, and then 73 RBI. Those totals were 102 and 93. So if you go and look, you say, oh, Bo finished 105 on the player rater last year, according to Razzball. those counting stats certainly hurt. Like, if we see him steal 10 bases this year and we see him get back up to be a 90-90 guy, then he's going to consistently be a top 25 threat again, just given the high floor to hit, the batting average being so good. There's so much value there. So, yeah, I'm still in on Bo, and I'll happily buy low if anyone wants to sell him.
There we go. 3 for 3, buy low on Bo for sure. Moving over to more of a veteran guy, though I think one that's pretty undervalued now for whatever reason. That's Francisco Lindor, who just came off a 30-30 year, his first 30-30 year of his career, had the most steals of his career, and the first time over 30 home runs since back in his Cleveland days, back in 2019, after he had back-to-back 30 home run years there. Overall, 31 and 31 of each with a 254, 336, 470 slash line. Add in 108 runs and 98 RBI to that. Was one of the lone bright spots on that New York Mets team that everything was just collapsing around him last year. So I think that kind of that took a lot of the spotlight, the demise of the Mets, and people flew under the radar a little bit that Lindor went 30-30 this past year. Still only 30 years old. Yeah, it feels like he should be a couple years older than that. But Michael, where are you valuing Lindor right now? Because again, I feel like he's become the undervalued kind of veteran of this group.
Yeah, it's felt that way the past few years with Lindor. He just seems like that. He's the guy I like to call the Adam Jones back in the day for fantasy, where you or the Andrew McCutchen during his MVP days. Like, you get these guys, and they may not be the sexiest guys, but they're just going to, you know, they're going to help you win. They're going to make that they have such a high floor with a high ceiling. And we saw that with Lindor last year. Even my rankings, I have him 8th in my dynasty rankings, below somebody like Jackson Holliday, below Gunnar Henderson, who we're going to speak about, and Ellie De La Cruz. So am I falling victim to the shiny toy syndrome a little bit? Yeah, I absolutely am. And I'm also looking at Lindor as just a guy that he stole a career high last year, 31 bases, 31 homers. I still think there's a little bit of that, those early struggles in 2021 that kick in with people where they have that fear where they're like, oh boy, he signed this big contract. Look, he hit 230 that season. He struggled for the first half of that season. Is that going to happen again? You still see people talk about Jose Ramirez that way too. And that was 4 or 5 seasons ago whenever he had that really off year. But once it happens, people, it's in the back of their head. Like, is this going to come back again? Am I expecting a return of the 30-30? No, I don't think so. But 25-25, definitely, I think that's there. The Mets were middle of the pack last year in stolen bases. So to me, it's really just about wanting to steal. And I think we'll see that again with Lindor this year, maybe not to the extreme, but he's one of the safest guys you can get. And 30 scares a lot of people off. The wheels are not falling off of Lindor right now. So I don't know if you can buy him low, really. I just think he might be one of those guys who's just like, I don't know if I really care about him. Sure, maybe give me somebody who's younger, maybe a Matt McClain. Maybe let's do that. Let's do that deal if we can. The only thing I can think of people being scared of is if they associate him with Xander Bogaerts, where like, okay, Bogaerts had a really bad year last year. Should I get out from this before the wheels completely fall off? And if that's what's happening, then try to capitalize on it because there's still a lot of value left for Lindor.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. Like, you look at the metrics under the hood, and they're very consistent to the previous years. There's no indication that any type of decline is coming. And he actually had the best quality of contact of his career high barrel rate, 10.4%, career high EV at 91.2, and second best hard hit rate of his career at 43.9. And he just, if you just looked at his sliders at the top of his Savant page, like, nothing stands out at you, excuse me. But he is just the epitome of like above average everywhere. It's everything's like the 65th percentile, give or take a little bit either way. So just across the board, it's a very good ball player. So yeah, and I think we all just still undervalue him. Like, even me, like, where do I have him in mind? I have him all right, 7th, but could I move him up a couple spots higher? Sure, I absolutely could. He's that good of a player, and again, pretty underrated. But Chris, you have him higher than all of us. You have him 5th here, so obviously you're still very much in on Lindor and believing that he's a great buy right now for a dynasty team.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, this is just a pretty big tier of shortstops here when we look at it. Like for me, Bobby Witt and Corey Seager above the rest of them. And then it's a pretty big tier from Trey Turner all the way down to Ellie pretty much. Like those are all within 10 spots of in my overall ranking. So pretty close here. I just feel like Lindor is about as safe as they get. It's not a sexy profile by any means, but just gets the job done. Even hitting 254 last year, Lindor finished 12th on the Razzball Player Rater, which is elite. And just imagine if he hit the 270 that he did in 2022, would have gotten a probably even more of a boost there. But the 31 home runs, 31 stolen bases speaks for itself. Don't think he does that again. I would be shocked if he steals 31 again, but 20 does seem realistic. I would say 20 is a sweet spot there considering the new rules. Stole 16 in 2022. Still has solid enough sprint speed and instincts on the base pass to steal enough. So a 30-20 season is still highly valuable. And given the contact and the quality of contact, I'd actually expect Lindor's average to be a bit higher than the 254 that he posted last year. 84% zone contact, according to Savant, which is really solid. And 78% overall, which is are both fine. Those are a little under league average, but you can play with it. It works. So I'm sorry. I was looking at his career numbers. The league average, he's better than league average in both. So that's certainly a plus, and you expect the average to tick up there. So yeah, I just think Lindor's safe, a safe bet there to give you power and speed and counting stats. We'll see how it all plays out. The lineup in New York, obviously not as good this year, but Lindor still should get the job done consistently.
Yeah, and it's not a bad lineup either. It's probably like a middle of the pack lineup. Depends if there were some rumors about them trading Pete Alonso. I don't think they're going to. They probably would have if they were going to at this point. But yeah, I definitely think even that year he had like in the 230s. Like look at he's become like the Chris Davis, the Chris with a K of XBAs. 254, 254, 255 the last 3 years. I think it'll bounce back in the average, maybe back up to 270. I think that's definitely possible with his power speed blend. All right, let's round out this segment of the show with the top 10 with maybe if Ellie's not the most polarizing shortstop atop these rankings right now, this guy is CJ Abrams from the Washington Nationals, a guy that about a year ago value was pretty down after he got rushed to the majors in 2022 and didn't look good at all. And even the start 2023 season, he was first couple months of the year, he was hitting barely over the Mendoza line, had a big middle of the season, did slow down near the end of the season. But overall, 18 home runs and 47 steals. Can't be mad at that. 83 runs scored as well with a 245, 300, 412 slash line. But Michael, this is a very interesting profile to say the least. Obviously, Abrams is a big-time runner, but the rest of the profile, there's still a lot of red flags here. So I'm a bit hesitant, but I wanted to hear your thoughts on CJ Abrams.
Yeah, I'm pretty out on him overall. Even with my redraft rankings, I have him, I think I said 46 or something like that. And it just feels disgusting. There's so many red flags with that profile. And it's a profile that I typically avoid at all costs. Yeah, the stolen bases are nice. And yeah, he's one of the guys who can steal 60 bases, but I don't really trust the hit tool. I don't really trust the power at all. We make the mistakes of going off of Statcast sliders all the time, but he's a guy who is just, there's so much blue there, especially with the quality of contact. And it really scares me for the price. And really, that's what it always comes back down to. Every single person is draftable except for Adalberto Mondesi for Eric Ross. But outside of that, everybody is able to be drafted at a good cost. But with Abrams, what are you getting in return? You're drafting him at his peak cost. You're leaving little room for positive return in redraft and his dynasty price right now. Because if we're banking on Abrams just to steal those bases, yes, he's young. Yes, speed doesn't age. He's going to give you those. But I question how much he's going to be able to get on base. I don't trust the walk rate. What last year is 5.2%. That's nothing. The quality of contact metrics, nothing. The power, yeah, I don't see a world that he hits 18 home runs again. I think it's more likely he gets sent down to the minors than it is that he hits 18 home runs again. So yeah, I'm out on him totally. And if I have him, if I lucked into getting him and buying him low, he's a guy that is just a really huge sell high for me right now. And I will take it, even if on paper it looks like a loss, I'm more than okay taking that if that means I get him off my team before he implodes.
Yeah, I think now is a great time to entertain selling high, because you'll probably get a good offer for somebody in your league, whether it's 12 team, 15, 20, whatever. There's going to be at least one person in your league that's going to be very high in Abrams, a guy that's a person that's fully buying the hype and will give you a really good return for him. And yeah, I think he's very polarizing, and I've had some discussions with people on Twitter or X, whatever. And I'm not saying he's bad. Obviously, I don't think any of us are saying he's bad, but I think there's just a very small ROI possibility, especially in redraft, whereas ADP was like 37 or something like that, where speed is obviously there. That'll provide value. He could still be 12 to 15 homer guy or something like that. But again, aggressive average has not been there outside of a couple of weeks. Contact skills aren't terrible, so I don't think his average is going to be 220 all the time. But yeah, I just feel like there's more of a chance his value goes down this year than up. But Chris, where are you at right now with CJ Abrams?
He's so tough to evaluate. I've had him top 10, but I think that there's a really low floor here, which is concerning. The splits were horrific. And I know that he's a lefty, strong side, but he had a 512 OPS against lefties last year and 169 plate appearances. It wasn't a small sample. Talking a 166 average, a 240 OBP, and a 272 slug. Yeah, I hit righties really well, but that was still a below average OPS of 786. Let's say below average. That's probably not below average. But think about a player this caliber that's going, it's like a top 50 pick. Certainly need to look at an 800 plus OPS. And when you see the splits like that, it's pretty drastic, to say the least. And for the season, a 712 OPS combined, 18 home runs, and 47 stolen bases will obviously talk and sell for fantasy purposes. There's also 6 triples, 28 doubles, so that's encouraging. But under the hood, I think there are more question marks. Abrams is still young, though, 23. But what kind of power will Abrams get to? Will he get to 18 home runs again? I'd be surprised, personally. Hard hit rate is 20th percentile at 36%. The average EV was 16th percentile among all hitters at 87.5 miles an hour. Barrel rate at 6.9%, really low as well. So those things don't really bode well for power, in my opinion. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see some power regression there. Maybe Abrams is a 15 home run bat this year, and that'd be great. Can he steal 47 bases again? Maybe. But what kind of stats is it coming with? I think that Abrams is a really tough eval. I think that his price right now is potentially maxed out, because what ultimately, like, how much higher can he go? Even doing this last year, still finished 54th on the Razzball Player Rater. How, I just don't understand the profit margin here. And that's really the biggest thing from an ADP standpoint. Going at the 35th player off the board at an ADP of 38, that's pretty wild to me. I just don't think there's room to profit here with CJ Abrams. And so for that reason, probably a sell in Dynasty.
Yeah, and that's what I was getting at the other day on Twitter, and all the Abrams porters were out there like acting like I said he was terrible. No, this is not like a Mondesi situation here. I'm not bashing him like that. But yeah, this the price tag is just in all formats, redraft, fantasy, whatever. This is way too high right now. So this is maybe the best selling opportunity you'll have on him potentially. Obviously, we can't tell the future, but right now, easy sell for me right now. All right. Gunnar Henderson obviously is a phenomenal player here. And I think I went to talk about him before Abrams. I jumped over Gunnar on the spreadsheet here that we have the outlook. But Gunnar Henderson, obviously, we talked about him at third base a bit here, but obviously still eligible at shortstop, at least for this year. We'll see what the future holds. Very good rookie of the year. Had 28 home runs, 10 steals, 255, 325. 489 slash line. Where are you at on Gunnar here? I think there's a pretty split camp on him too, because at least more so for redraft, I put out these tweet for giving away FTN premium subscription, and I had people had to reply with their guy that they're avoiding in the top 50 in ADP, again, just for redraft. But there was a lot of Gunnar Henderson responses, which really surprised me. So I think he's maybe some people are still doubting him, or at least whether he could be an elite asset or not. I think he can. There's a lot of good in the profile. And 28-10 as a rookie, Michael, 100 runs scored. Great young lineup there in Baltimore, too. I think he can, but where are you at on Gunnar right now?
I'm insanely high on him. I don't know if I'm the high guy on us. I think I am. I have him second overall for me. And I may be the high guy in redraft, too. And I didn't realize it because people are really high. But I have him 17th overall. And I know I think I'm going to have to move him down maybe about 20, 25 a little bit, just because that's not leaving a lot of room on for any growth or positive return. You need him to actually do what you're doing and what you expect him to do if he's hitting that, if you draft him 17th overall. But I don't really get the dislike in the profile or why people are scared off of him. If it's just maybe people are fearing a sophomore slump, or if it's okay, he plays in Baltimore. We know that's a pitcher's park now. Even though if you look, that's really affecting right-handed hitters more than lefties, and the majority of his power goes to the right field side of the ballpark, which I actually like for him in his profile. People say, oh, maybe the stolen bases, that's what he's getting knocked on. I expect to see those kind of go up a little bit. The sprint speed is really good. I know that's not the catch-all for judging a player, how good he's going to be with contributing to steals, but he's somebody I'm expecting to climb up with his stolen base numbers. He had 10 last year. I think we look at him as a Bo Bichette type guy where he can get 15, 17 stolen bases this year pretty easily. I love the lineup. I love that the team that they have around him. Yeah, I'm all in on Gunnar Henderson, and he's somebody I'd love to have in any single league I can, redraft, auction, dynasty, Otano, whatever it may be. I'm all in on Gunnar Henderson.
Chris, how about you?
Yeah, no, I do think he's a really good buy, and it may seem like I'm a bit down on him having him sixth, but that's not a knock on Gunnar at all when we look at the overall rankings per se, because he's still a top 25 player for me, coming at 24th in my dynasty rankings. By no means a knock there at all. I really believe in the profile. I buy the changes that he made in 2023. Seemed to have progressed really well across the board, like throughout the year. And you could expect that with a young player breaking in the majors. There is a big learning curve. And again, not everybody's going to hit the ground running. Still went 28 home runs, 10 stolen bases with a respectable average. I think the average probably ticks up a bit more. Gunnar's a patient hitter, picks his spots well. Just got to get rid of some of those ground balls. And if that happens, then I'd expect there could potentially be room for a lot more here. I think we're not going to see Gunnar be an elite stolen base asset, but I do think Gunnar's going to consistently provide 10 to 15 stolen bases. And I think there's more juice than people might expect. You look under the hood, the exit velocity data is really good. So yeah, I'm betting on Gunnar Henderson. I do think that Gunnar's a really good buy.
Yeah, the quality of contact has already been very good. Both years, over 52% hard hit rate, over 92 mile an hour EV, and this year jumped up from a 9.8 to an 11.4% barrel rate, 85th percentile sprint speed as well. Yeah, the K rate is not even that bad either. That was, I think people thought it'd be a bit higher. It's been around 25.5%. You'll live with that. So if he's a 260, 270 guy with 30 home runs and 15 steals, plenty of runs scored in RBI in that lineup as well, with all the good young hitters that are around him there in Baltimore. Yeah, I think he's going to be a very good five category guy and like a top 20 or so player for the foreseeable future. All right, moving on to the next set of our rankings here, 11 through 25. Michael, who you got in those spots?
Okay, 11 through 25. I have Anthony Volpe, Matt McClain, the wonderful C.J. Abrams, who we just spoke about, Willie Adames, Mr. Dansby Swanson, Jackson Merrill, Mason Wynn, Adele Amador, I apologize if I butchered that, Zach Neto, Colson Montgomery, Jet Williams, Sebastian Walcott, Matt Shaw, Vaughn Grissom, and Tommy Edman to round it out.
New Red Sox, new Red Sox Vaughn Grissom getting some love there. Love to see that. Chris, you got 11 through 25.
All right, so starting at 11 would be Matt McClain, followed by Xander Bogaerts, Jordan Lawler, Nico Horner, and Tyro Estrada. And just reading that, I don't like Tyro Estrada in that spot, but he's there, so we're going to roll with it. 16 through 20 is Dansby Swanson, Colson Montgomery, Anthony Volpe, Ha-Seong Kim and Tommy Edman, and then 21 through 25 being Adiel Amador, Jackson Merrill, JP Crawford, Carson Williams, and Carlos Correa.
Getting some prospects mixed in here. It's a pretty fun part of the rankings, I think. This is where you can go a million different ways. For me, I got O'Neal Cruz, Jordan Lawler, Bryson Stott, Nico Horner, and Anthony Volpe, 11 through 15. 16 through 20, Ha-Seong Kim, Xander Bogaerts, Dansby Swanson, Jordan Westberg, Adiel Amador, and 21 through 25, Trevor Story, Matt Shaw, Tommy Edman, Andres Jimenez, and Willy Adames there. Another, maybe the third most polarizing shortstop right now, probably is O'Neal Cruz, hard not to be. Guy that is obviously a massive human being at 6'7". We've seen the big power speed blend from him, you know, sprint speed 84th percentile last year. And then the only real bigger set of data we have to work off of him is in 2022. And he had a 15.5% barrel rate, EV right around 92 miles an hour on average, 46% hard hit rate, but also had a 34.9% K rate. Another one where, Michael, the potential range of outcomes here is so vast. Like, this could be a top 25 player if everything clicks. And this also could be a guy that's at the top 100 because he can't keep the strikeout rate in check. And that still remains to be seen. Hopefully he can stay healthy after he missed basically almost the entire year last year with the ankle injury and then the renewed soreness he had later in the year. So hopefully we can get a full year out of him to see what we got from the O'Neal Cruz. But given what we do have, where are you valuing him right now?
There's a reason you didn't hear me talk about him in my 11 to 25 is because he's top 10 for me. He's my number 9 overall. And if you told me make a list of not your favorite players, not the best players, but the players you enjoy watching the most, he would be on my top 5 list. He is so much fun to watch. And yeah, it feels if you want Ellie De La Cruz, but you don't want to pay the Ellie De La Cruz price, you can get a discount Ellie De La Cruz with O'Neal Cruz because it's basically the can we get him? No, we have him at home already. That's O'Neal Cruz. And he's somebody I'm really looking forward to seeing a full season from. And Pirates Fest took place this weekend in Pittsburgh, and he was there signing autographs. They had asked the front office question, and boy, I bet you can imagine they asked a lot of questions to the Pirates front office. But one of them was, how's O'Neal Cruz doing? And coaches are going to say what they're going to say. General managers are going to say what they're going to say. But O'Neal Cruz, I'm healthy. I'm ready to go. My goal was to play winter league, but I'm going to be ready for spring training, which is very encouraging to hear. He's somebody I am all in on. The barrel rates are amazing. Watching him play shortstop, I know that doesn't matter for fantasy, but seeing him just throw 100 miles per hour across the diamond is insane to watch. Watching a 6'7" guy play shortstop is incredible. I have him for over 30 homers this year, and I have him for 25 stolen bases. He's a guy I know there's a wide range of outcomes there. I think he's less risky than Ellie De La Cruz, but I don't think he has quite the ceiling, but there's a better, safer floor with him whenever you factor in everything that comes along with it. So yeah, O'Neal Cruz is going to be really fun, and we just have to hope that ankle stays healthy so we can see him put it all together. And this is his age 25 season. So I think if we're going to start seeing that breakout, it's going to happen this year.
Yeah, I can imagine if both him and Ke'Bryan Hayes had that breakout, that could be a really good left side of the infield for Pittsburgh. And you look at his 2022 sliders and barrel rate 96th percentile, EV 91st, hard hit 81st, arm strength 97th percentile, and sprint speed 98th percentile. A tick under 30 mile per hour sprint speed there, 29.9. Yeah, he's another one where I'm just, all right, let me see him for a full year. I still value him pretty highly. I think in my overall, he's like in the 60 to 70 range. I've held him steady there. Did drop him a little bit because missing the entire year, but I still believe that this could be a top 25 player. And another situation where if he can just hit 250, which I don't think is asking a ton to for him to hit 250, especially with the quality of contact that he runs and the speed that he has. These guys usually run a slightly higher BABIP than most. So if you can get 250, that could be with 30-plus home runs and 20 steals or so. Again, this could be a top 25 guy. And, yeah, I agree that I feel a little bit safer about him than Ellie at this point in time. Obviously, O'Neal Cruz is a little bit more established than Ellie. But at the same time, I don't think the upside is there. I do agree with you. But the upside could be a top 20 player. So I'm definitely waiting to see. If I have him, I'm holding him. At this point, you have to, right? If you were to sell, you would have sold last year. So at this point, you've held him all this time. I would continue to do so and then see what you got with him this year. I'm really looking forward to see, hopefully, a healthy year from O'Neal Cruz. Chris, what are your thoughts on O'Neal Cruz?
Yeah, I'm way in as well. Top 10 for me. I think it's the perfect time to invest because we know the upside and the cost is a bit diminished by the injury last year. There were tweaks made down the stretch in 2022 that were leading to more consistent contact. We were seeing really good results. And I wouldn't be shocked if O'Neal Cruz does take off this year. And if he does, the price is going to soar because we know the kind of upside we're looking at here. Big power, big speed. So I think that you have to invest now if you want to, because you look down the street. I know there was such a small sample in 2023, just 40 plate appearances. But in September of 2022, started making some tweaks, hit 284 and had a 900 OPS. Over that month, 6 home runs, 3 stolen bases. Like, O'Neal Cruz flashed the kind of upside and the talent that is there in the profile. And again, it doesn't surprise me to see a tall player like this struggle at the gate and get exploited. But I think O'Neal Cruz is ready to explode in 2024, and I'm heavily investing.
All right, pretty clean sweep there as well for O'Neal Cruz. Moving over to former Red Sox, current Padre, Xander Bogaerts. And the question we're asking, is he done being a high-end fantasy asset? Unfortunately, this pains me to my core. I love Xander. Came up as a rookie, won a World Series, great guy. But yeah, I think he is. Is he done being a decent or good fantasy player? No, I don't think so. You look at the floor for him is so high. Again, not elite high, but this is a guy that's hit over 285 in each of the last 6 years and 8 of the last 9. And even last year, the power metrics have dropped off. But hey, let's just steal 19 bags for a career high mark. Do I think he's going to do that again? No, probably not. But I think he's still going to be good, like top 100-ish guy. But we see the power is dropping off a bit. Maybe he moves off the position in the next couple of years. And obviously, he moves over to first or wherever it may be. Value will be, he'll be less valuable there. But where are you at on Xander Bogaerts, Michael? Like, is he a guy you'd still be targeting or is he a guy you're starting to fade now?
He's a guy I'm starting to fade, and I left him off my top 25 because I am projecting him to move off of the position. And he's one that I'm okay at. If it was a startup draft here and I'm looking, I'm like, all right, do I want to go after Xander Bogaerts here? Do I want somebody with a little bit more upside? I'm going to go with the upside. There's still some years of production there, and it is funny because he went 19-19 last year. If he went 20-20, I do think people would be a little bit more positive just because we're so obsessed with the round numbers there. Yep. People are like, oh, he had a 20-20 season. Okay. But no, he went 19-19 instead. So it's just like, okay, the world
just a bum.
Exactly. And it's very funny just how we operate like that. I did see an interesting tweet from our friend DJ Short over at NBC where he said, interesting split on Xander Bogaerts this past season. He slashed 192, 310, 340 with runners in scoring position, and 310, 361, 443 with nobody on base. So wow. Most of the time you can kind of attribute that to luck. And even if you factor that in, the luck wasn't in his favor last year. And you can look, he had his worst BABIP since 2018. So there is a little luck there, but we don't just look at that anymore. BABIP just doesn't tell the story. You look under the hood, there's a lot of declining there. And yeah, it makes me sad too. Always a big fan of him, but he's somebody I'm fading. And I'd be fine taking him as my starting shortstop in a 15-teamer if I needed to. If I just was like, all right, I'm going to load up elsewhere, just take him as a middle infielder, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I think he's definitely moved more into that middle infield. But yeah, deeper to league, like you said, if you waited, he's still a fine guy to have for the next couple of years. But that stat doesn't surprise me. You know, I didn't know that stat, but like he had a career low, but he had 58 RBI last year. That's the lowest he's had in a full season since, man, his first full year back in 2014 when he had 46. And previous low after that, he had 62 in 2017, but went up over 100 2018, 2019. And even the last 2 years before this past season, 79, 73. So he hasn't really been a big RBI threat in a couple of years now. And yet, but the power metrics declining, like the barrel rate's gone down about 3% over the last couple of years. So yeah, it's pains me. I love the guy. He's one of my favorite players ever. And obviously, you know, love him for winning 2 World Series here in Boston. But yeah, I think he's done being an elite guy. But Chris, what are your thoughts on Xander Bogaerts?
Yeah, the 19-19 is a bit of a surprise, especially from the stolen base standpoint. I'm not sure that we see Bogaerts duplicate that again. Now, the Padres have been a team that they've let their guys run for the most part. So maybe we do, but I'm not buying. I think he's more valuable in an OBP league. Then the batting averages are good, but the OBPs are exceptional. Outside of 2023, they've been 370 plus pretty regularly. Just doesn't hit the ball that hard. And while making good contact and being pretty patient at the plate, I'm just not overly interested in Bogarts. And like Michael said, I'm going for the upside if I have the choice.
Yeah, no, that's fair. He's a guy that I can see him just in a startup, just continuing in the fall, because people will go for the upside guys, or maybe they already have a shortstop and they don't need another one quite yet. So he's a guy that might fall to a pretty good price point in Dynasty League. So maybe you can scoop him up if you're contending team or looking to contend in year one for a good value. But yeah, he's not really a guy that you look to build around anymore. Moving over here to the Chicago Cubs with Nico Hoerner, a nice breakout season this past year. 2022 was a solid year from him as well. 281, 10 home runs and 20 steals, but obviously this is the big breakout. 283, 346, 383. Obviously the power not really so much, but 9 home runs, 43 steals, and nearly scored 100 runs at just below it at 98. A lot of, obviously, the plate discipline. Michael, very good here. A lot of red in that regard. Doesn't whiff that much. Doesn't strike out much at all. But another guy where, you know, quality of contact, not really that impressive. Can he duplicate the 43 steals? So I don't know. Are you buying what you saw from Nico this past year, or is he more of a sell for you right now?
It breaks my heart, but he's more of a sell. Like, he was one of the guys I loved coming out of college. I took him ninth overall in my 2019 FYPD draft in a points league, 20 teamer. I was so pumped just because he felt like so safe. Like, maybe he was gonna change his swing whenever he got drafted to the Cubs, try to develop some more power. Didn't really see that come out, as we know. He's always been more of a floor guy for me. And the 43 steals shocked me last year, to be honest with you. And I know it's a new environment where everybody's stealing more bases, but it's hard for me to expect him to come close to that. He stole 20 the season before. I think we're looking at maybe around 29, 30 steals for him this upcoming season. Don't really expect any more of the power. The batting average is fantastic, and it's easy for us to overlook that a little bit, but it's important to have those guys on your team. But I'm worried about the price, that he's going to be a little too high for me to want to take him, just because he did have that big year with the stolen bases. And it feels like people are going to be a little bit disappointed just because he's not going to hit that 40 stolen base mark again. Even if he hits 30, that's still fantastic. 30 stolen bases with a 285 batting average, you're going to take it. But yeah, the quality of contact isn't great, and it's not really what I look for. He's always been that floor guy, but I think people are drafting him as something more right now. So I'm going to fade in the other direction.
Yep, I'm definitely in agreement there. Chris, how about you? Are you buying Nico, or are you selling Nico?
Definitely selling. I'm a bit shocked. And I know this is a dynasty show, but the redraft ADP of 62 going as high as 32 in a draft, I can't get on board with that, because there's minimal pop. What are the chances that Hoerner steals 43 bases again? I think there's a slim chance that he steals even 30 again. If he steals 30, I think people would be happy. But, man, it's just a really high price tag to invest in. I think now is the perfect time to cash out and see what you can get. And I'd much rather find someone that has a little more pop in the bat, maybe not quite as safe. But like, if you told me I could trade Nico Hoerner for O'Neill Cruz right now, I'd do that 100 times over and over again. Not sure you can do that in Dynasty, but I'd at least give it a shot, given how people are valuing Hoerner right now. Apparently, elite contact, you know, solid speed, but I don't really think there's much else here.
I think you, maybe not straight up, but I think that's close enough where you can maybe add a second piece and get a deal like that done, which I would be totally fine with. And now that you mentioned the redraft again, I know this is a redraft question, but I just thought of this. I got to ask it to you guys. If you were forced, you're in a draft room and you're being forced to take either Abrams at 38 or Nico at 62, who you got to take one of them. Can't say neither. Michael, which one are you taking?
Nico Hoerner. I'm taking him 10 times out of 10 over CJ Abrams. Yeah.
Chris, how about you?
I might take Abrams just because the power, there's a little more juice, and I'm not sure it's much more juice, but there is a little more. We at least saw an 18 home run output, which I don't think is repeated. But if you want the batting average, you want the floor, it's definitely Hoerner. But yeah, I think I just take Abrams and hope that he gives you 15 home runs with those stolen bases.
I think I'm leaning Nico here, but I don't feel good about either. Yeah. You will see, I can guarantee you'll see zero, let's say fall, like 30 picks past their ADP. You'll see zero shares of either of those two guys or any of my redraft teams. And I don't think I have either of them in any dynasty league that I can think of. But let's go over to Nico's teammates here in Chicago with Dansby Swanson, who had another solid year, a little bit down from previous year, obviously. Went 25-18 in 2022 with a 277 average. Dropped down to 244. Still had 22 home runs and 9 steals. A mixed bag. Look at the metrics under the hood. Some red, some blue, kind of all over the place with that profile. We did see the hard hit rate drop, but the barrel rate remained consistent. He's had a barrel rate above 10% each of the last 5 years. Even improved the K rate and the walk rate a bit this past year. So do you think, Michael, do you think that Dansby can have a little bit of a bounce back year and maybe still be a viable starting shortstop option in the Dynasty League?
I think he's fine. He's not anybody I get. He's one of those guys you draft and it's like, it feels like Starling Marte for the longest time in redraft. You get him at the end of the third round. It's just like, okay, this is fine. No one's ever excited to draft him. And it feels like that's Dansby Swanson too. Like, I'm not excited. I'd rather have him than Xander Bogaerts. And it sucks because Swanson's top 20 last year in WAR, I believe. 4.9 WAR for him last year. Like, he's a great real life player, but is he more the 2022 guy that we saw in his contract year in Atlanta? Or is he more of what we saw in 2023, 2021 with the Cubs and the Braves in 2021? If you look, he had very similar end of season numbers in 2021 and 2023. And I think that's more true to who he is, which he's a fine guy. The 244 average seems a little lower than I'd expect him for. I'd project him for maybe more closer to 255, maybe with 23 homers and maybe 10 steals, and that's fine. I have him more at the back end of a starting caliber shortstop. I prefer that in redraft and dynasty. And again, if it's a startup and I'm looking, it's like, all right, do I want Dansby Swanson? Is my goal to win right now with my early build? Okay, I can plug him in there, but I'd rather gamble on the upside of a Jackson Merrill, who is going to go before him in dynasty drafts anyway. Give me somebody with the upside instead. And that's how I feel about him.
Chris, how about you?
Yeah, so I wonder how much of the 2022 season was it being a contract year for Dansby, and he certainly got paid. The results were much better. I think he probably falls in line closer to the 2021 version. Like Michael said, he hasn't posted an OPS over 800 dating back to 2020, shortened year. So other than that, it hasn't been like – Swanson hasn't been an elite player. There are some solid numbers. I think that he can be a usable shortstop in a 15-team league, but he's not like giving you an edge by any means. And I'm not sure there's much more upside either. We look at the contact skills, and they're not great. The zone contact this year was 76%. And that's been right in line the last several years. The league average was 82. The overall contact rate also quite low at around 72%. So that's not great either. So I don't know. I'm just not really buying in. I'm not sure how Dansby ages. He's locked in for a while with the Cubs, but I'm wondering if the contract kind of looks sour over time.
Yeah, that's a fair question to ask. But you always have to wonder, how will the hair age? Obviously, that's one of Dansby's best tools is that glorious mop, the lettuce on top of his head. Is that what the kids say nowadays? What's the term for hair with the kids these days? Is it lettuce? Is it something else? I don't even know. I should probably go ask my 11-year-old daughter. She'd probably have the answer to that. But yeah, Dansby is a guy that you look at the speed, and it was weird. It came off a career-high 18 steals last year. And then speed's going up for almost everybody this past year. And he went back down to his usual 9-10 steal range, where he's been for most of his career. He had 2 years at 10, 2 years at 9, and then the 18 in there. So if he's just like a 20 to 25 homer guy, 10 steals, 250, 260 average or so, 53 career, pretty much what you can expect. Yeah, I think he's going to be, look at that Xander range where he's fine to have better at middle infield than as your starter, but I still think there's some quality years left for Dansby Swanson. Last name we're talking about here, more of a quiet breakout. And even for me, like I wasn't really, I knew he broke out and had the best year of his career, but looking at the numbers getting ready for this show, I was like, man, he was even better than I expected. And that's JP Crawford. for 28-year-old for the Seattle Mariners, who was a guy that I think I wrote up in my waiver wire article at least once a year up in previous few years, a guy that you'd plug and play when he got hot or when you had someone injured, but not really someone that you were looking at to hold for the entire year. But again, coming off the best year of his career, scored 94 runs this past year, career high, 19 home runs, career high, which is more than the previous three seasons combined. He had 17 home runs previous 3 years, 266, 380, 438, that 380 OBP also career high. So if you're in an OBP format, you got a 380 OBP, you got 19 home runs, and you got 94 runs scored, that's pretty good. And you saw the quality of contact also jump up. It's still not great, but it's he was like in the 85 to 86 mile EV range, and he was 88.3 last year with a 36% hard hit rate. So again, still not good, but better. Are you buying that this version of JP is here to stay, Michael?
I am not. And it's funny, Jordan Rosenblum in our Highlander league that we're all in, he offered me a trade, as he does, and just a few weeks ago. He's like, hey, here's JP Crawford. You can finally get that shortstop you've been looking for. I'm like, oh, yeah, my short. Oh, my God. JP Crawford had a really good season. Right. So it really just was a very quiet breakout. And he's always been one of my favorite players. I watched him and I interviewed him as part of a series I did, Life in the Minor Leagues, when he was in Reading. And he's just like, I just want to get to the big leagues, man. That's all I want to do. I'm ready. I'm ready. So I've been really just like happy just to see his ascension go up. But this is a fantasy podcast. This is a dynasty podcast. He's not a guy I'm really excited about. I don't really trust the power. 19 homers last year. Like, it's fine. His expected homers were 17. So he got a little lucky on that. He's a guy I love having in points leagues. He's a guy I really like targeting where OBP matters. But overall, he's not a guy that I really look to get. The speed isn't really much to write home about. You might get a steal or two. And if I don't really trust the power to be there, to me, he's just a points leagues guy, and which is fine. But in a regular draft, whether redraft or dynasty 5x5, I'm not really going to have any JP Crawford on my team. So sorry, Jordan, you're stuck with him.
Yeah, I think he talked to me about Crawford too. And I think Crawford's fine. But it's not like if the power dips back down, which it probably will, at least to some degree, it's not like he has a bunch of speed to fall back on. This guy's never been a guy that provides really any steals. So he's been 3-3-2 the last 3 years. So doesn't have that to fall back on. So if he's back down to even like 12 home runs, it's just, it's already not a bad profile, but not really an inspiring one. It'd be just meh if he's back down closer to 10 than 20. But Chris, close us out. Where are you at on Mr. JP Crawford?
I think Crawford's pretty interesting. Still hitting the prime of his career, 28 years old. Went to Driveline last offseason and made a ton of strides with his bat speed. And it showed because the average EV jumped over 3 miles an hour last year, which is huge. There's no guarantee that sticks. Also, doesn't hit the ball in the sweet spot that often. Doesn't barrel it up well. Just not ideal launch angles all the time. Some inconsistencies with the launch angle. Always walked at a high clip. So as Michael said, maybe a better points or OBP league play there. And while there were jumps, I think you should be cautious like of what Crawford can do again. Remember, somebody with fringe power, we're talking about a pretty hard stadium to hit in. Probably one of the more friendly or pitcher-friendly stadiums in all the majors. So seeing that jump in power, and he was pretty evenly split, 9 home runs at home and 10 on the road last year. So will that track again next year? I don't know. I think that question still has to be answered. And you look at some of the underlying data, I think there may be some power regression coming. Maybe Crawford settles in as like a 15 home run bat, which would still be much better than we had seen in the past. And if the contact skill improvements stick too, then you know we could be looking at a decent average at least. I think Crawford's a deeper league play, like a middle infield target, but he's not somebody like I'm actively going to get. But I do think that his season was underappreciated in 2023, which is why I put him on the outline, because I don't think many people realized what a good year he had. And the question is, will that success translate over to 2024? Maybe not to the full extent, but I still like the player.
Jordan Rosenblum, if he's listening, he's screaming at his computer right now. Yes, it's legit. Someone buy him from me. But
It is worth noting, too, that J.P. Crawford was on the latest on base with Mookie Betts podcast, talking about his experience and his encounter with aliens. So if that kind of tilts the scales for you a little bit, you want a player who has encountered aliens, you can go ahead and take Crawford, because that may raise his profile up for you a little bit.
My question is, did the aliens help his breakout last year? Was this like a recent thing and something happened? Like he got abducted and they gave him like more strength and that's why he hit 19 home runs? Because I'll be interested then, but if this was like 8-9 years ago, then I'm not.
It seems like it was a recent thing. He said he was outside Outback grilling. He told his wife, hey, go get your camera. He saw aliens, so I don't know if it's a Space Jam type thing. I don't know if he's going to get randomly drug tested tomorrow by MLB or not, but alien encounters, I think J.P. Crawford is your league leader in those so far.
That might be one of my five favorite things I've ever heard from a guest on this podcast. Tying in Space Jam is always a way to win me over. That's one of my favorite movies of all time, and no one can say anything bad about it. I will shut them down immediately because that movie is pure gold. Even the one... Obviously, I'm more of the Michael than LeBron in that debate. But even LeBron in the Space Jam reboot, I was very hesitant to go see it. But it was actually pretty good. I'll admit, I liked the first one more, but it was better than I expected. But good way to round up the show was what a bit of Space Jam talk on a Dynasty Baseball podcast. But Michael, before we get out of here, I'll throw it over to you, give you the floor here to let everybody know all the good stuff you got going on over at The Athletic.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. It'll always be Twitter to me, at Michael Waterloo. I'm also on Blue Sky. If you're ever there, feel free to type in the name. Not too common. You will find me. And yeah, a lot of exciting things coming up at The Athletic. We have our draft kit that's going to be coming out soon. I have some pretty cool features I'm working on. And of course, my favorite article I do every year, my 2024 Fantasy Baseball Obsession. So keep an eye out for that in March. I'm already putting it together now. And yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. This was a blast, and March will be here before we know it, for sure. It's already January. Draft seasons, Dynasty and Redraft are really starting to kick up now. It's a great time of year, even if it's very cold here in Maine and about to have the biggest snowstorm of the year. Got to keep those thoughts warm for baseball season. We will be back again soon with our shortstop prospect rankings, and we'll also have outfield next week as well. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.